Our first speaker is going to be Jeannie Marazzo, who's on your schedule as second, but will be going first because she's presenting for someone who's having a baby.
And I'm immensely grateful to the other speakers for being flexible about this. Thank you so much. So I am presenting for Lindley. You've seen the title. I think everybody knows in this audience, bacterial STI disproportionately affect HIV-infected men who have sex with men. They increase the risk of HIV transmission, and despite this, STI screening and HIV primary care remains suboptimal, particularly of extragenital sites. So as background, most of our HIV care in Seattle is situated at the Madison Clinic at my institution, Harborview Medical Center. It's a Ryan White-funded clinic. We have a little over 2,500 patients. Almost 81% of them are men, and 66% of those are men who have sex with men. As part of formative research that Lindley presented at ISSTDR this summer, we assessed patient and provider barriers to extragenitals testing and STI testing in general. And the patient responses were really very interesting. Almost a third of them reported seeking testing, STI testing outside of their HIV care provider setting. Most of them because it was easier, however, one in five because it was anonymous. There's a lot of desire to please your primary care provider, and they really didn't want to tell people that they were messing around. Some of them wanted more frequent testing, and very few cared about cost and convenience. The provider barriers were just as you would expect: time, knowledge, and sadly, lack of comfort with sexual history and exam. So what we designed was a program that would allow for either providers or the patient themselves to essentially refer these patients to a place where they could do screening of themselves, which I'm going to talk about. It involved self-referral with initial contact with one of the nurses in the clinic to do symptom triage, in other words, to assess if the patient was acutely symptomatic, and if that was the case, they were strongly encouraged to see a provider even briefly, and that opportunity was made available. They then were asked to fill out a patient assessment form. If it was somebody who was seeing a provider and the provider was not able to or could not for some reason provide screening, then the provider could refer the patient to this patient assessment form. And this was the assessment form that we used. It congratulates people for taking a proactive step in caring for themselves by choosing to test for STIs. And then we ask them very specifically what their behaviors are. Do you give oral sex, put your partner's penis in your mouth? Do you? What do you do? Do you top, do you bottom, and then do you do oral sex, et cetera, anal sex? So we're asking them exactly what sites are exposed and then saying if you answer yes to the appropriate run, telling them where to screen, whether it's their rectum or their pharynx, and as well as getting a urine. I think one of the most innovative and exciting parts of this was that we actually had technical assistance funds from Dr. Bolin at the Division of STD Prevention, and we had some money to actually create these incredibly detailed, incredibly, I think, attractive and cool, kind of edgy, a little retro, cartoony, STI self-testing room posters. So we designated a bathroom for the purposes of this. We got the clinic to agree to that, and we have these very large posters up on the wall in the room, and you can see it's pretty detailed. This took a lot of time and effort working with a really super artist. A lot of work on Lindley's part went into this. And we are happy to provide these to you as gigantic PDFs. You can print them out as high qualities. We just ask that we keep our logo on it. So the objectives that I'm going to talk about today are to tell you how this program worked. How effective was the self-testing program at increasing testing and increasing the number of cases detected? And did patients find it acceptable? So in order to look at effectiveness, we took two strategies. One was to abstract electronic medical records, and we looked at all STI testing and cases identified in this clinic. We compared the year of 2012 to the first year of implementation of this project, which is April 1st, 2013, to this past March. And then secondly, we looked at patient assessment forms and linked them to the patient EMR. And those assessment forms were the ones that I just mentioned that asked them about their behavior. So we linked those forms to the actual medical record to look at the results of the diagnostic testing related to what they reported on the form. Obviously, that was only available for people who self-tested. Okay? And then for patient acceptability, we did a survey of those who self-tested at the time of self-testing, and then we did a convenience sample of people in the waiting room who were MSM, and we did it over 3 weeks in February of 2014. So what were the results? There's a lot of information on this slide, but I think Lindley has highlighted the major points for you. So what you're looking at, this is testing coverage. So what proportion What were the numbers of tests that were performed? Again, this is just among MSM, not all men in the clinic, but again, the majority of our men are MSM, who attended at least one primary care or nurse visit, and we're comparing the baseline on the left-hand column to the intervention period on that second column. And what you can see by percent change in the p-value, that there was a significant increase in the number of tests performed by any site for gonorrhea, chlamydia, pharyngeal chlamydia, gonorrhea, chlamydia, and that's just bundled because of the Aptima test, which is what we were using. It's not that we wanted them to screen their pharynx for chlamydia. Rectal gonorrhea, chlamydia, urethral gonorrhea, chlamydia, all three sites, a whopping 9.8% increase in the number of tests done, so almost 200 more tests. And then syphilis. Syphilis essentially stayed the same because we basically gave people a lab slip to go get their blood drawn, and as you know, in these clinics, it's very easy for the providers to check off a syphilis test, and that's done pretty regularly. So it was really this extra genital testing that we were very interested to know. So then you might add, well, did we find more disease? And this next slide tells you the story there. So this is the slide talking about cases detected and test positivity among all gonorrhea testing done as part of this program. And you can see that when you look at the metric of any gonorrhea, during the baseline period, 5.5% of the tests done were positive. During the intervention period, a similar percentage, but we actually had an increase in the number of cases of 49 for a percent change in test positivity of 2%. Again, these are different time periods, so we can't directly link this to the intervention, but it's fairly suggestive, especially when you look at the most impressive one, not surprisingly, which was pharyngeal gonorrhea. So a relatively large increase in the number of cases detected, an increase in the percentage there. Now, these were not statistically significant unless you looked at the sort of moderate decline in urethral cases detected, but it is a trend that I think is positive, and we'll get to some more metrics in a moment. These are the related data for chlamydia, and you can see that there were some positive changes in the number of cases detected. Again, you can see the percentages there ranged from 21% to 33%. There are, interestingly, a decline in the percent positivity of rectal chlamydia, and that may be because we don't see as much rectal chlamydia as we do gonorrhea, and we may have just been testing more men, so it actually could have been a denominator sort of issue. Again, these are not significant, but I think all going in the right direction. And here's another way of looking at the effectiveness. And again, remember, those are the medical record abstractions, so there's a lot of noise there. This is, I think, a lot more direct way of looking at this. Again, not as generalizable, but clearly assesses the program and the results. So of those patient assessment forms that I showed you where people reported on their behavior and then were directed to the sites to screen, there were 390 who completed those forms. Unfortunately, we had a few bumps in the road. Whenever you do pilot projects, those happen. And early on, 42 were missing labels, so we couldn't link them back to the electronic medical record. We ended up, however, with 348 that had complete data. Of those, interestingly, a quarter were self-referred, so 90 of those men, and 74% were provider referred, 258. These were people who would not have been screened at all, and their providers weren't going to do the screening. We can come back to that later. And what did we find? There were 91 MSM diagnosed with 133 infections. So the prevalence of positivity or the prevalence of infection, any of these infections that I just told you about, syphilis, chlamydia, gonorrhea, at any of those sites, was 26%. So one in four of these men actually had an infection detected. I think more impressively, if you link the results of that self-assessment form to the results that I'm just showing you now, to see who was positive by their reported behavior, it becomes actually even more impressive. So of the men who reported that they gave oral sex, 348, 320 actually did get a pharyngeal test, so 92%, and 10% of those had gonorrhea at the pharynx, which was pretty striking, I think. If you look at the anal sex report of receptive anal sex, we managed almost all of those men to test themselves, and the prevalence of rectal gonorrhea was 11%. Prevalence of rectal chlamydia was 9.3. So this really surprised us, to be honest. Did the patients find this acceptable? I think you'll be not too surprised. In my last minute, I'll tell you that if you asked the self-testers, all of them felt, and you'll see the scale of 75 to 100, based on the form, the poster, and the supplies, that it was mostly easy and mostly helpful, and the experience was pretty good. When you looked at the waiting room survey, we had 98 MSN who responded to the survey. Only about half of them knew about the survey, so that's something we need to work on, and only about half of those completed the self-testing. So they were kind of similar to the men that we were seeing before. 47% of the men who answered in the waiting room survey said that this increased their frequency of testing, and we asked them whether they preferred provider-collected or patient-collected, and a number of them said they preferred self, but it was really pretty evenly split. And 97% said they would recommend it to a friend, and most of them were actually pretty positive about the program. So just in summary, I think we've demonstrated that a combination of provider education and STI self-testing really increased STI testing. I didn't have time to describe the provider education component. Lindley actually presented that at ISSTDR, but this was not a small effort, I can tell you, with the HIV care providers, although they were delighted that they didn't have to do the extragenital testing anymore. We had increased cases detected but not test positivity. Again, more screening, so I think it was just screening more people, detecting more disease, but probably you're screening the same population you were before. Patients like the program overall, and some issues need to be addressed. Not all these men had syphilis testing because there were some challenges with the lab slips and getting them down to the lab. We couldn't do the testing right there. So in conclusion, introduction of this self-testing program in HIV primary care settings in combination with provider education, I think, has a lot of potential to increase testing and identify more bacterial STIs among HIV-infected MSM engaged in care. Certainly, having tried to change provider behavior for decades now, I'm over that. I'll stop there. Take any questions.
So we have a few minutes for questions?
I think I have a minute and 49 seconds, actually.
2 minutes by my watch.
Sorry I went fast, but Lindley put a lot of slides in and I didn't have time to edit them. Amy, do you want to comment at all? Amy Radford should really be acknowledged as helping facilitate this, so thanks for coming. And I think you should be up there. There you are. Okay, well, we're happy to share posters and materials, so just contact us and get the word out. Thank you.